Welcome back to the Political Checklist here at the Rundown Blog. I'm political editor David Challian, joined as always by senior correspondents Judy Woodruff and Gwen Ifill. And here's my big question to get us started on the debt and deficit, this ongoing story. We know that this week in the House, they are going to vote on this cut, cap, and balanced budget amendment plan. Why? Tell me why the House of Representatives is going to vote on something that has no chance of becoming law. Judy.
Because...
Yeah, Judy. Why is that?
Because, as the two of you know, I think very well, there are Republicans in the House, and it's a Republican majority running the House. There are Republicans who feel very strongly that the budget should be balanced. They have watched this debt ceiling debate, frankly, get away from them. It's not headed in the direction they want. There aren't the cuts they worry aren't going to be as deep as they want. And so they want to make a statement. They want to take a stand on a balanced budget amendment. And it, for many of them, it's almost a matter of religion with them.
That being said, Gwen, does this make Speaker Boehner's job easier, having this vote, to eventually reach a compromise on getting the debt limit raised before August 2nd?
I don't know if it makes his job easier, but I think he's in a position where he doesn't have a lot of choices. I mean, Paul Ryan came out with a budget which was not as draconian as this cut, cap, and balance plan would be, and it went nowhere. So they know it's not really going to go anywhere. But what I've been struck by is how...
Although it did pass the House.
It passed the House.
Right, exactly.
But passing the House isn't becoming law. But you're right. This is the answer to your original question. Just getting it passed in the House is all they really care about. Even the proponents of it admit, we just want to get it on the record. And that's what struck me about this whole debate, kind of how nakedly political all sides have been about what the calculations are. They're not saying we're doing this for the good of the American people. They're saying because we want to get on the record, because we kind of want to get reelected, or they want the other guy to get elected. And the president's being just that political, too.
And they want their constituents to pay attention. I mean, these folks who care so passionately about the balanced budget, which is not going to happen, they want their constituents to know that they did everything they could. And that's what this is all about.
But the clock is ticking. It's one thing to take symbolic votes or votes to go campaign on back home when you're not up against a deadline here, but are they wasting precious time by holding this vote?
Well, they would argue they're not. They would argue this is serious, that this is that this is something they care passionately about and that they would like for the Congress to pass, that they can't control the Senate. They're saying in a perfect world, this is what should happen, and we're taking a stand.
There are a million great metaphors about this point. My favorite today was, you know, the idea that both guys have a ticking time bomb, and they each have the pin in their hand, both sides, and the question is who's going to pull it. There is also the school of thought that this was never going to get resolved. It's just like the women's soccer game. It wasn't going to get resolved until the penalty kicks at the end. We are always going to go to the very end of this before some sort of deal. What looks now to be, a trillion dollar cutting deal would be agreed to, but not until the last possible moment.
I like
moment.
The soccer analogy.
I'm glad you worked
into the soccer game.
Something about the time bomb.
I was really disappointed in that soccer game. Before we leave, I want to turn to presidential politics. Rick Perry over the weekend did an interview with the Des Moines Register, and he's feeling the call to run more palpably than he has previously. And it looks like, I would say, chances are he is likely to jump into this race. What kind of an impact would it have on the race?
Well, he's got a larger-than-life personality. Rick Perry walks into a room, you know he's there. He's kind of a big guy with a big impact. And as a result, he speaks to this longing that so many Republican primary activists seem to have for someone else, someone who is not as bland as someone, other people in the race, someone who is capable of raising a lot of money, comes from a big state, someone who, and they've been searching around, kind of interviewing for that person for a while. And so Rick Perry suddenly is hearing the calling, I think is the way he put it.
But whether it's going to change the race, I don't know. I mean, the polls show that, you know, they continue to show that Mitt Romney is out front. Is Rick Perry going to move to the front in the polls? I don't know. I mean, Ron Paul doesn't think, you know, we necessarily need another candidate from Texas in here. But, it's one more indication that this is an unsettled field, that the Republican primary voters are just not completely satisfied with who's in there, and they keep looking for Mr. or Ms. Next.
Right.
You know, who's up next?
I'm just curious to see if Rick Perry has that magic potion that they're all looking for, which is to combine the establishment wing of the party with the Tea Party energy. He does have a foot in both camps. And I'm wondering if he's going to be able to find a way to weave that all together.
The more the merrier.
That does it for this edition of The Checklist. Be sure to click us on again right here next week. Thanks for watching.